Welcome to Whistleblowers, Series 4, Episode 2. Today we're doing the follow-up to our last story about Chris Dawson and the missing body of his wife, Lynette Dawson. And it seems most of the information Jennifer Stone brought to us last episode was very accurate. Today we'll give you an update on what happened at the Judge Alone trial, who was Hedley Thomas, and what was in that box that he'd put up in his garage roof all those years ago. Stay tuned, my name's Greg Kerr, you'll be hearing from Jennifer Stone shortly. And while we listen to the Judge Judy theme song, this trial was Judge Alone verdict. Let's have a listen to where things progressed during the week. Here's the judge.
The evidence does not reveal how Mr. Dawson killed Lynette Dawson. It does not reveal whether he did so with the assistance of anyone else or by himself. It does not reveal where or when he did so, nor does it reveal where Lynette Dawson's body is now. The charge of murder in this trial is unsupported by direct evidence. The case against Mr. Dawson is wholly circumstantial. It is therefore necessary that the Crown persuade me beyond reasonable doubt not only that Mr. Dawson's guilt is a rational inference, but that it is the only rational inference that the circumstances would enable me to draw.
You're listening to Justice Ian Harrison from the Supreme Court of Australia, reading out his thoughts. I believe it went for 5 hours, and I'm going to cut the tape there and bring in the star of our podcast, Jennifer Stone. As you're hearing that, Jennifer, let me first ask you, were you in the court that day? Because I know you have been going to this trial and other trials in the last few years. Were you there on that day?
No.
How does it, what's happening for you as you're hearing the judge read that out? Were you listening?
Yes, I was listening. And I noticed that he made it, every point that the Crown Prosecution had brought up, he actually had accepted or denied. And that was a very good point because he's done his case, so an appeal will be very hard to do with the law, which is if the appeal is a harder process to get, then it's harder for Christopher Dawson to get out of prison. But they're also doing now, because of that guilty finding, they're doing the nobody, no parole. And that's before the Attorney General in New South Wales.
So they've changed the law?
To change the law.
Right.
In Queensland, that's changed since 2017. Mm. But New South Wales doesn't have it. Mm. But they're looking at it. But another case in New South Wales that links in is Kelly Lane, with Tegan Lane, the baby, was never found.
Right. So if you had listened to our previous podcast from 2 weeks ago and you stayed with our very amateurish editing, you would have heard Jennifer talking about her thoughts. And because there was no body found, there was always this feeling that the judge, you know, Chris Dawson may never be found guilty. So what feelings did you have that day? We'll hear the rest of what the judge said in a minute, but how were you feeling? You've done a lot of research into this.
I actually thought there would have been a finding of not guilty because nobody, the Crown has not been able to prove Christopher Dawson actually or allegedly paid for a hit. There's been no money transfers. So then you've got to think about what could he bring to get a murder done, and that's very hard from a school teacher perspective. Mm. You know, an A in science doesn't get someone murdered. Mm. So then you've got to start to think, well, why was the police looking at him having had murdered Lynette without finding a body? And even with them digging up the backyard, they only found a cardigan with stab wounds, but there was no blood on it. So if those stab wounds were done on the body, there should have been some DNA on it at the time. But that may have just been done as anger and buried in the backyard as something to remind him. of her.
So there's all these theories and there's all this information, and Jennifer presented just like a tip of the iceberg last episode. For those that have just joined us and haven't listened to this story before, Chris Dawson was a well-known rugby league player in the state of New South Wales, Australia, and his wife of many years went missing. And there was two separate coronial inquests and determined that Lynette Dawson was dead and that her most likely murderer was her husband. But it's never been able to be proved. Okay, so that's why we're going into this story, because it's been a cold case for so long. Then there was the other aspect of the Teacher's Pet podcast. We'll listen to the creator of that, and Jennifer can talk about that in a tick. But let's just hear again the last segment of the judge reading out his verdict, because Jennifer and I were both sitting here 2 or 3 weeks ago thinking he's going to be found not guilty, and, you know, people like Jennifer would have to do more research and bring more theories to light. But have a listen to this. This is the judge.
The circumstantial evidence in this case, considered as a whole, is persuasive and compelling. None of the circumstances considered alone can establish Mr. Dawson's guilt, but when regard is had to their combined force, I am left in no doubt. I'm satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that the only rational inference that the circumstances enable me to draw is that Lynette Dawson died on about 8 January 1982 as the result of a conscious and voluntary act committed by Mr. Dawson with the intention of causing her death. Christopher Michael Dawson, on the charge that on or about 8 January 1982 at Bayview or elsewhere in the state of New South Wales, you did murder Lynette Dawson. I find you guilty. You may sit down. Mr. Dawson, it will be necessary for you to be taken into custody.
Every time...
Well, there we go. The game is over. Mr. Dawson, you'll be taken into custody.
It's interesting. Lynette Dawson's family, they didn't think the guilty verdict would come. Right up nearly to just after lunch, the tide started to turn and they thought there was more pluses on their side than the other. But you've got to look at the statistics too. 98% of these unsolved murders, when they are solved, and even a normal murder, it's someone that knows them. It's someone local to them. It could be the boyfriend, or it could be the husband, or it could be someone they know. And that's the theory, one of the theories, that they didn't follow through with, not for the Crown. Plus, it's very hard for the defence to put a position through to a judge because there's no evidence, there's no body, you know. But, and these are the ideas that should be talked about in the police room and then in the DPP room. But as we now know, there was a problem with the TPP because Lloyd Babbs, he had a connection with Christopher Dawson to do with the football. Football. Hey, there's a link there, isn't there?
Now, that's a very strong link to, and we mentioned it in our previous podcast, the very strong link to, as Jennifer calls it, football. And when we refer to football for our international guests, thank you for listening, by the way. Please like and subscribe. We call our rugby league game football. And so the inference that Jennifer's making, and she knew this all along, Jennifer's known this for 40 years, is that this football team that Chris Dawson played with, as has been brought to light by other journalists like Paul Kent, was a mixture of criminals and coppers in an area of the inner west of Sydney known as Newtown. So go on, Jennifer.
Well, Newtown has always been in the limelight for the underworld. We had the problems with the Enmore Club, which is interesting because I did some research. The Newtown Jets Club was 52 Enmore Street, Newtown, but it was a club on Enmore Road, they said, which is the same road, where they used to have Lenny McPherson And Tom Donegan used to fight over having their poker machines in to collect money for allegedly illegal actions, you know.
Right. So, look, those people that have covered this story and researched it for years, like Jennifer, know the word on the street or the word in the pub. There's a lot of rumours and stories, that, and a lot of it's based in fact. And in fact, the research that Jennifer has brought to light is very similar to another journalist who writes for the Telegraph, and we see him on Fox Sport. He's very well reputed, Paul Kent. Now, he backs up what you say, Jennifer. He says, the street corner tip is that the hitman was Nettie Smith, and the place was the old Newtown RSL Club. Now, the old Newtown RSL Club is where the Newtown players would go for a beer after the match or after training, and the wives would go down there beforehand and socialise. And it's interesting that, his research talks about the Dawson brothers. They were always considered as weird, you know, yes, identical twins. But the other women and girlfriend noted that when the Dawson brothers arrived, the wives of the two men would behave very differently. So even back then, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know when women are being treated roughly.
Yeah, it's all controlled. And the controlling can be in money factors or other ways of getting out of the household.
Just on that Nettie Smith aspect, Paul Kent brings that up in his article, and you can read that. It's online. It's in the Daily Telegraph. But in our last episode, Jennifer Stone brought to light that one of the players in the same team as Chris Dawson was Paul Hayward. And Paul Hayward, for those that don't know, was an international drug smuggler and was convicted many, many years ago. So, you know, criminals and coppers in the same team in Newtown, it's not a good look from the start for Chris Dawson. Who was he married to, Paul Hayward?
Oh, he was married to the sister of Nettie Smith.
Wow.
But Paul Hayward was in prison when Lynette Dawson went missing.
Yes.
So if we have the link to Nettie Smith,
yeah,
the police actually have on tape, which was taken in a cell when Nettie Smith was in custody after Lynette Dawson's murder or disappearance. He was talking about Lynette Dawson and said that there were six murders that linked to his driver, which was allegedly at the time Doug Kempsey or something. But it's interesting that that guy has had fundraisers out. He's run out of money too. It's like they live this limelight of the underworld, and then as they get older, they run out of the money. But that is interesting because that's a scenario that was never put up by the defence. Okay, Christopher Dawson says he's not guilty. Christopher Dawson may not have organised a hit, right? That's a scenario. Who could have picked up Lynette Dawson at the bus stop? Someone she knew. She would have known Doug Kempsey because Doug Kempsey, though he played a lower grade, he played up with the Dawson brothers. So that's someone she might know. If you get into a car, you're going to get in with a friend or a relative or someone you know. You're not going to just get into a random's car. But maybe that car that picked her up was the car that the police had not put two and two together, because that exposes further this underworld link with the Newtown Jets.
It's a very strong link, and for Paul Kent to be allowed to write a full story like that. We'll come back to the underworld links a little bit later, because I think that's worth a couple of podcasts on its own when you get into the tentacles and the names that have been mentioned in that article. And Jennifer needs to be careful here who she makes allegations about, because some of this information still, you know, hasn't been brought to light. But look, let's go on to the other aspect of this story, which is the box in the roof, which we all know. The Box in the Roof became the award-winning podcast run by Hedley Thomas, which you can download it on all your major podcast platforms, called Teacher's Pet. Now, here's a segment of a recent interview by The Australian, and then I'll let Jennifer give her insights into how the podcast went a long way to helping with the conviction of Chris Dawson.
In the roof of your carport. How had it ended up there, and why did you decide to go back to that box?
The box of files that ended up in the carport were the product of the work that I'd done on this case when I was a features writer for the Courier Mail newspaper in Brisbane. It was 2001 that I first heard of Chris Dawson and Lynette Dawson and this case. And I only heard about it because an inquest was unfolding in 2001, the first inquest. And as a result of that inquest, there was a recommendation from the coroner that Chris Dawson should be prosecuted for murder. The stories that were appearing in the Courier Mail newspaper, filed from Sydney, from the inquest at that time, were not very comprehensive, but they were compelling. I really wanted to know more about it. I was riveted by the story and just thought that if I got into this story, it might make a very interesting weekend read, perhaps an investigative piece. So at that time, I asked the features editor if I could go to Sydney and meet the police officer who had put together the police brief. His name's Damien Loon. I flew down and I met Damien Loon at the DY police station, and I also met Lynn's sister, Pat Jenkins, and I was given an opportunity to study the material that formed the case that was the evidence, public records, that was part of the inquest proceeding. I remember reading that material in this Northern Beaches police station and emerging, blinking hours later, just stunned at how much detail, how much concerning, alarming information was contained within those files. And I knew it was going to be a really powerful story, and I hoped that it would lead to a prosecution for murder.
So, Jennifer Stone, you, very similar to Hedley Thomas, have investigated not only this missing person, but many other missing persons, predominantly females. We've covered some of Australia's worst killers, you know, Ivan Milat. We've looked at the King's Cross sting. We've looked at all these underworld figures, and you have given a lot of your information over to authorities. You've been visited by authorities, Detective Darren in this case. What happens for you when you hear Hedley talk about this? Is years and years of research and information that he had. You also have a similar experience.
Yes, I have. I've given my information to the police too, as I believe Hedley Thomas had. But Hedley Thomas didn't find Robert Siltman. Robert Siltman came forward for the reward money.
Who was Robert Siltman? We mentioned him in our last episode.
Yeah, he was the player at the Newtown Jets who played down a grade. So he was playing in the same grade, I believe, as Doug Kempsey. Which
and he held on to this information for years, and then in 2018, like you said, he came forward. He was after the reward money. What did he reveal?
Well, he revealed that Christopher Dawson had talked to him about finding a hitman for his wife, which is interesting that he, that Robert Siltman and Doug Kempsey were in the same team. They played reserves team, and Robert Siltman would play up. But how would we weren't told about Doug Kempsey, how much he played up too. So would Lynette Dawson know him? And that'd be a very possibility by socialising after the games at the club. It would have been someone that she knew. It may have been someone that her husband had talked to over the period of time. There's plenty of links where the police weren't looking. So all this information Thomas Hedley had shown from the coroner's inquest that had happened twice, they both had the same outcome as allegedly the husband had killed the wife. They sent the information to the DPP and nothing was happening. But the DPP then said, I've got a conflict of interest in this case. That came to late 2018, April 2018. And that's interesting because Christopher Dawson wasn't charged until December 2018. So, you know, sometimes there's a barrier, sometimes there's someone stopping it. Though he was there until the 17th of July.
And I guess a lot of the...
Lord Babb was still at the DPP until the 17th of July 2021.
Wow.
So he has resigned now from that position. But that would be a position of control. Mm. And you've got to look in many of the unsolved cases, I talk about an axle within it as the control person where everything's got to go past. And these axles are positions that the underworld allegedly look for to keep their people out of prison.
It's quite amazing stuff when you look at the bigger picture. And look, what most of us were at work or going about our business on this day. As Jennifer said, she couldn't make it to the final day of the trial, but we were texting each other. We were waiting for this verdict to come out. You just heard the judge reading out the verdict of guilty. How will this unfold? Let's hear from the ABC, Jamel Wells. What happens now?
Some found that Chris Dawson's behaviour overall after the alleged disappearance of his wife suggested that he had murdered her. And the judge pulled apart the defence case in his judgment, and he said that phone calls Chris Dawson said his wife had made to him after she left the family home just were not probable, because he said, why would you ring someone you were walking out on and leaving? And he said Chris Dawson was the only one who heard from his wife after she disappeared in 1982. So he essentially said he was lying, and he said sightings of Lynette Dawson after 1982 that were talked about at the trial were very unreliable. He said people said they saw her at various locations, but it was from a fair distance away, and he said that that evidence was unreliable. He said he found that Chris Dawson had motive to kill his wife because he wanted to be with his new girlfriend, his student, and the family babysitter, JC, who we can't name for legal reasons. Mm.
This has been such an intriguing case, and a lot of it has been too because of a very popular podcast that was linked to it before the trial even started. Did that make the trial complicated in some way, particularly for the prosecution or the defence side? Did that podcast and the popularity of it?
It did. The podcast, The Teacher's Pet, got millions of downloads around the world, and it was released in 2018. Chris Dawson, by Christmas 2018, had been charged with murder. So that podcast set this whole legal process in motion for his defence team when he was committed to stand trial, to try and actually have the trial stayed, because they argued that there's no way he would ever get a fair trial after this podcast came out. Now, it depends which way you look at it, because interestingly, a lot of people say after the podcast came out, the DPP was prompted to swing into action and lay charges. But the DPP has issued a statement this week saying the DPP acts independently and there's no way they're going to be influenced by the media or a...
Any thoughts on that, Jennifer?
Oh, it's interesting that the podcast, it was a witch hunt.
Mm.
And it was a marketing ploy. Get the numbers behind. Of course they've got to react. It's a reaction.
Right.
It's a fear. What if there were links that exposed Lloyd back to the Dawsons, exposed to the public? Wasn't exposed until Hedley Thomas told her in his podcast about the links of Lloyd Babb. But it's interesting, I've been on about Lloyd Babb since about 2014 or 15. But then before that, I had a few leads. And that was from people in the underworld telling me to be careful of him.
And if you want further evidence of what Jennifer's talking about, we won't go into the underworld right now because there's so many tentacles there, but the Daily Telegraph dated September 3, 2022. There's a full-page story written by Paul Kent. It just touches on some of the names that Jennifer knows about and mentions, and the connections to SP Booking, rugby league players protecting SP bookies and collecting debts, And then, you know, certain individuals, whether they're rugby league players or affiliates, getting into the real dark business of standover and murder. So let's move on from Jamel Wells and the ABC. This is the reaction of Chris Dawson after the verdict.
In talking about the verdict itself, but you were in the courtroom. Take us there at that moment that the guilty verdict was read out.
Yeah, well, good afternoon to you, Michael. It was an exceptional moment. That courtroom, relatively small for the size of attention that was inside, only 42 chairs, all of them packed with families, both the families of Chris Dawson and, of course, of Lyn Dawson as well. All of those with splashes of pink on them, you could see quite clearly who was who today. Uncomfortably, some had to sit side by side. But as that verdict was read out, when Justice Ian Harrison came out and delivered that, what is it now, a 5-hour verdict he's taken to reach that conclusion, to go through those judgments, there were all gasps inside the courtroom 13A on the 13th level of this Supreme Court building. Members of the family of Lyn Dawson started hugging each other. They didn't stand up. No one was too sure what the rules were inside that room, but they were reaching across each other's laps and patting each other on the shoulders, on the arms, on the legs as well. You could see the relief. There were tears from some.
So the family, we'll just mention them briefly in a minute, Jennifer. You've reached out to the family and you were saying it's very hard to get in touch with them. We often forget, us crime nuts, that there is a family involved here. We've just seen footage of the beautiful Lynette Dawson and those two daughters and the wider family and community that have been affected by this and the trauma. Have you made contact with any of the Lynette's family?
Yes, I have. I have now, Lynette Dawson. But in the past, what the police have said, if I have a question and I can't find the answer and the question's compelling enough, just send it to them because they might have the answer. And it's interesting that if they don't have the answer, they're going to search for it. What they told me when Detective Darren came, that I missed a person. That person, I believe, is Robert Siltman in the whole case. And that was the part I didn't get. But at least I had the leads that went in, you know. And her body going missing fits the pattern that I write about in the King's Cross Sting. Now, that pattern, Peter Dawson asked me for information on, which is Christopher Dawson's brother, to get this police search warrant to expose the trophies they collect. But then he wouldn't do it. It all happens for a reason. And that reason is very compelling when the police can see that action's taken a step forward, but then, hang on a minute, the brakes go on, I don't want this to be revealed, brings up more questions. And it makes you want to dig deeper.
And we will dig deeper. Those people who have listened this far into the podcast, and we welcome our international guests. We will continue on this track of, well, in Sydney anyhow, the underworld figures and some of the stories that maybe there's some more boxes that journalists have in their roof that need to be brought down and brought to light through podcasts. But we'll just finish with a lovely brother of the murdered lady, whose body's never been found, talking after the verdict went down and the game was up for Chris Dawson.
A little bit emotional. After 40 years, my sister's been vindicated. So we'll just we'll start with a few words. This verdict is for Lyn. Today her name has been cleared. She loved her family and never left them of her own accord. Instead, her trust was betrayed by a man she loved. The court has found what we have believed to be true for so many years. Chris Dawson took the life of our beloved Lyn back in 1982. On behalf of our family, our heartfelt thanks to all who came forward to speak the truth on Lyn's behalf, to give her a voice 40 years after she lost her own. Many of those people have been advocating for her for a very long time. And thanks to the media, all you people out there, who allowed those voices to speak loudly. Missing people need to be heard despite their own voices being silent. Thanks to the police prosecutors who saw the truth in Lynn's story and pulled various disjointed facts into a cohesive whole. We'd also like to acknowledge Judge Harrison, who made it plain that he was across the evidence put to him. We'd also like to acknowledge the difficulty this outcome will cause some. We hope in time that understanding will lead to healing. We also would like to remember those who loved Lynn who are not here to see this judgment. In particular, my mum and dad, Helen and Lynn Sims, and my brother who passed away only 18 months ago.
So very, very sad ending for the family. After this little speech from Lynette's brother, he makes a call to Chris Dawson asking Chris to come forward with information about where the body is buried. Please let them put the body to rest, a plea to Chris Dawson. And we won't show any more segments. The podcast's gone for long enough, Jennifer, but my understanding is Chris Dawson was in tears that day. He's now gone into custody and he's in jail, and we've heard reports from jail that Chris is receiving some of the hard treatment that he dished out to Lynette and others over the years. He's receiving it back in the form of younger men in jail. He's copping a hard time. He's gone into protective custody. Life's not real good for Chris. And from what we understand is that those that have been around this story for a long time is that Chris Dawson has been a liar from the start. The judge has brought that out. And unfortunately, he's been lying to himself. And many of us have been in that situation where we want to protect ourselves. And the verdict, unfortunately for Chris, has broken the lie. And his tears, possibly one can't help but think, were tears of sadness that the game's up, that we all know the truth and that he can't lie anymore. The judge has made sure of that. So we won't be seeing Chris for a long time. I've got nothing else to say. Do you want to add anything else after seeing all of this before we wrap this up?
How to make this case go away. On some of the trial cases just lately, there has been suicides that have happened in prison just before verdicts are read. One happened just lately before Justice Elizabeth Templeton. And that stops that verdict of the judge being held, like being exposed. So we've got to the 11th of November for the judgment to do with sentencing. So it'd be interesting if they get to him. How do you get to someone in prison under protective custody? I know.
There we go. What a way to end the podcast. Now, Jennifer, that will do us for today. I really want to thank everyone for listening this far. There was a lot of dialogue today. You've heard the summary of the Chris Dawson, Lynette Dawson murder trial, and it's now wrapped up. However, it's not over, as Jennifer said, and we'll be bringing to you updates from Chris Dawson and how he's going in jail. We're also going to come back in the near future with some research that Jennifer's done on the William Tyrrell story and where we're up to with that. We're also going to touch on the bikie wars in Sydney and the tit-for-tat murders that are going on as we speak. And any other information that you're into at the moment, Jennifer?
No, not really.
All right. Well, thank you for listening today. Please like and subscribe, and we'll be back next time on Whistleblowers.